Reese, you know the moment that I knew that Kate's sermon was going to be fire?
I don't know. There's quite a few. Tell me which one.
So it was before she even opened her mouth. I think this was probably the experience of maybe 90% of the women in the audience. And I only know this because I'm married, but this little like clip thing that's really popular, you know, the one that's kind of long that everyone puts on all these girls are putting on the back of their head. It's like a popular like TikTok, Instagram thing right now.
Uh-huh.
I sound so old when I'm saying this, but I feel like when she walked up there and was wearing that, you know, whatever it is.
Hair clip.
Yeah. Like all the women in the room were like, respect. And they were locked in.
Mm-hmm. Respect the hair clip, dude.
Yeah.
Hey, as a man who has a top bun, I'm sure there's some shared, you know, some shared experience.
Yeah.
There.
Game respects game, you know. Anyways. Cool. Well, Reese, thanks for hopping down here with me, for the After Synergy Application Podcast, and looking forward to digging into what Kate had to share. It's always fun when we bring someone in from the outside to share some wisdom. So
definitely, it's an honor as always. I love podcasting.
Well, here we go. So as we were even like talking through, you know, where we wanted to go, what we want to talk about, I think we obviously, you know, Kate really laid out three good points to organize her message. Also, I loved how she like reeled us in with the storytelling. I think that was so good of like, you know, people love a good story. And so when we got sucked in, suddenly, you know, everything else she said had a little more validity because she's like, I've lived this. But yeah, so three lies combated with three truths. And we're actually going to work backwards.
For a very good reason.
Yeah. So stay tuned. There's
a specific purpose.
To find out what that is. But yeah, let's start with lie number three. Which was, if God's not answering my prayer, then he must not care. And Kate talked about the kind of these two ways of like relating to God in prayer. One, just going and like asking for like, Lord, I need you to do this thing. Versus like, Lord, what are you trying to teach me? And humbly saying like, how are you trying to use the circumstances of my life right now to form me, to make me look more like you? So what stood out to you from that third and final lie combated with the truth that he cares more than you'll ever know?
Yeah. So I think there was a point early on when she was telling a story, she said there was a difference in her thinking between how usually she would ask God, what's your vision for my life? But then her sense of resentment over time, she ended up presenting over time, she would say to God, here's my vision for life.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important. We want to try to maintain Jesus's attitude, not in just like the details of our everyday life, but specifically we want to be in relationship with others like Jesus was in relationship with others as a single man. So when Jesus said, your will be done to the Father, rather than saying my will be done, that's super important. I heard a pastor the other day, his main spiritual discipline is whenever he does anything, whenever he was golfing, he took a golf swing and even it went really bad. And he just says, after everything he does, he says in his head, thy will be done. Golf swing, click, totally messes up. He just says, thy will be done. Hits it, goes great. He just says, thy will be done after everything he does.
Highs and lows.
Man, exactly.
That's crazy. Yeah, I just really love that. I think that even expands so far beyond a conversation about singleness, but just I think is good wisdom for how we relate to God. Because we're going to go through, independent of relationships, just a lot of different circumstances in life. I think it can be really easy to, I don't know. Yeah, it's just like our will versus the Father's will, right? And what is like your go-to? Is it, you know, forcing your own will upon God, which is really easy to do when you're in that season of singleness or in a, you know, a difficult season, struggling with loss or grief or whatever, or is it even a spirit of like curiosity? And that even makes me think of like, I loved how she read Psalm 139 at the end. And there's this part where it says, you know, like just talking about how God knew you, like, and even knew you in, I was thinking about this, like the womb is like, you saw me before I was born. You saw me in my most vulnerable state. So nothing about where I'm at right now comes as a surprise to you. And then that phrase of how precious are your thoughts about me, oh God. Which is a beautiful thing to even realize that like God has thoughts about us. You know, that we are his beloved and that he wants to, you know, reveal to us the things that he is thinking about. And, I just think sometimes we don't want to hear him, right? We don't have the curiosity to say like, you know, God, your thoughts are so precious. Like, what are you thinking right now? How are you trying to use this season? And so even like that just curiosity of how the Lord's trying to use your current circumstance, I think even redeems like the way we think of any circumstance of just not viewing anything as beyond God's reach to redeem.
Yeah, I think that's important. Not like beyond God's reach, I think beyond God's embrace. Because I tend to think about it in terms of God's compassion. I think that the attitude that helps us value God's thoughts over our own thoughts, either those about ourselves, is the fact that God will always be more compassionate to us than we could ever be to ourselves. Mm. So I think it's very important that we trust his all-knowing vision of our lives over our own.
Yeah.
I think that's why that's such an insidious lie, that he must not care because he's not answering a prayer. It's if anything, the reason he's not doing it the way you want to do it is because he deeply cares and he wants things to go the best, the most wise, the most beneficial.
Yeah. And if we can get to that place of, and this is, you know, way easier said than done, but like full trust in like, okay, you know better, you care more, then that eliminates the fear of missing out. Because the best thing is just to be in his presence and to be fully present to, you know, the season you're in right now. And suddenly it's like, well, I know that, you know, being single right now is better for me than being in a relationship because I'm single right now. You know, and that's where the Lord, you know, has me right now. And there's something here, that he wants to do through that before I move into that, you know, whatever the next stage is.
Yeah. I think, just to kind of cap that off, there's this ever pervading question, what is God's will for my life? And I think you know, if you heard Matt Reagan talk at Fall Retreat, we so easily complicate that question.
Yeah.
Will has a lot to do with like, what does God's heart, like the combination of God's heart and character, how will that play out in my life? I can think about it as when I follow God's will, I'm doing whatever it is that satisfies his desire for my life, his desire and his purpose. And that doesn't have to be like, don't have to know the exact calling and vocation that God has planned out for me, because I think there's a lot of things God lets us discern. Mm. God is not going to make decisions for us 24/7. I think he wants to live life with us, not for us.
It's good. It's good. And I even loved how she said, just that like, you know, God can use any set of circumstances to make you look more like Jesus. It's not just, you know, the American dream, that he can use, which I thought was a really good, I liked how she combated that even of like, you know, I don't know what our culture frames as the good life versus like anything can be the good life if we're open to, you know, how the Lord wants to use it.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's lie number three. Moving backward to lie number two, was kind of this idea of like singleness versus dating versus like singleness and dating, like how those inform each other, or even, you know, marriage is a part of that too. But the second lie was if you're single, you're less valuable to the church, which is combated by the truth of if you're single, the church needs your presence and perspective. And then she even chose to back that up with Revelation 7:9. I'm talking about this vast crowd, too great to count, every nation and tribe. Talking about this idea of diversity, and how like we're diverse, but we're unified. And I thought that was a really interesting angle to approach a conversation about singleness with. What did you think about from that second lie and truth?
Yeah, I think with all of them, there's this give and take. There's like one way you can think about it, and then the alternative. I think with this, how the church views singleness, I think there's really two kinds of thinking about it. There's one that singleness is a burden that needs to be lifted through marriage versus singleness is one of many opportunities. I think Ben Stewart, he has just a super straightforward argument in his Single, Dating, Engaged, Married series where he says,
listen to it, read it.
It's so good. He says that, you know, everyone can agree, no matter what stage or marital status you're in, life just keeps getting busier. Life has a capacity to keep getting busier the older you get.
Absolutely.
So I think the fault in our thinking is that the best thing to do is to busy ourselves with another person. When I think Ben Stewart really argues that the people that have the most opportunity to serve the kingdom of heaven are single people because they just have so much time on their hands. Like so many college students can just wake up and say, I want Starbucks. I'm going to go get Starbucks. And Landon, I'm sure you can do that as a more newly wed person. But at the same time, there's a sense where like you have an awareness and you can't really just do whatever fits your timeline.
Yeah.
There are probably some times where you would like to get Starbucks and you just can't because of some restrictions.
For sure. But Alex's birthday was on Saturday and she doesn't like coffee and she got a $10 gift card to Starbucks. And so we're balling right now.
I mean, okay. Yeah, that is a blessing.
It is.
So I'm not going to hide, not going to shy that away. Yeah.
But no, I think even the part where she said like, you know, even in, you know, in marriage, you're giving up certain freedoms and, you know, there's certain things that are really good about being married that you don't have when you're single. And so I think it's that give and take. And I think this is honestly the one that even like convicted me the most, because I think it's like understanding that I still need to, cause I think there's just like when you're single, when you're in college, you know, you have roommates and like you kind of have those natural, like built-in friendships. And so now like, you know, obviously I'm living with my wife and like, you know, we have a friendship as well, you know, as a part of our marriage. But I think that even I was convicted, I was like, man, I want to like intentionally have like, you know, friendships with people who are single. And just, I think that, they can all inform the other. I even like talked to a student, after this message about, Ben Stewart's Single, Dating, Engaged. And he was like, you know, I think I've just read the Single and Dating, cause that's where I'm at right now. And I was like, man, you got to read, you know, the Engaged section, the Married section, because I think that even if you're not there, there's just such a gift to, having friendships and having relationships where you can speak from different sides. I think that goes for any type of diversity within the church. Just to be able to have compassion to one another because we know each other's experience. I think that's going to, you know, prepare us even more for when we, you know, and if we, Lord willing, you know, take that step. So.
Yeah. If you have a high value on your time, money, and emotional energy, you should probably think about being single, because you will be free of other people's expectations on a day-to-day basis. People are going to expect things of you within your friendships and your family, but you have an extremely regular expectation there. I think when it comes to also thinking about church, thinking about spiritual life, there is something that comes to my mind biblically, theologically. So Jesus has this passage where he talks about eunuchs. And I would not recommend Googling the word eunuch because that could really, you know, except maybe Wikipedia. But a eunuch is basically someone who decides to make a permanent commitment to in some method or another, not be able to be in a relationship, to really not be able to have kids. So Jesus has three different categories of eunuchs. He says, people who are made eunuchs, probably not of their own will, people who choose to be eunuchs, and then people who are eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven. And I think the important thing there is Jesus. We need to all understand that Jesus is really talking about himself. He is a eunuch for the kingdom of heaven. As far as we know, he was never in a relationship. Dating wasn't a thing back then. He never got married. It was all for the sake of him preaching and spreading the gospel of the kingdom. Sorry, the podcast got cut off there. As I was saying, so Jesus identifies himself as a eunuch for the kingdom of heaven. I think this is important because when you look back at the book of Isaiah, there's an interesting passage about eunuchs. So usually, like, eunuchs were not allowed to spend time in the temple. They weren't allowed to go worship like other Jews were able to, in the Old Testament time. But there's this passage in Isaiah that says, to the eunuchs who keep my law and keep my Sabbaths, they'll have an identity deeper than brothers and sisters. So I know it's a contentious point, but I think it's important that we maintain that, like, God is saying that you'll have more intimacy with him if you choose to be celibate. Your celibacy is a more direct route to intimacy with him than marriage is. Marriage is definitely the wandering through the wilderness path to get to that depth of intimacy. But God here is saying that identity is going to be deeper, which, I don't know, kind of blows my mind. I don't really know what it means.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think even like marriage being like the reflection of the intimacy that we have with God is like, you are getting to like the, you know, no, I don't need the reflection. I want to chase after the real thing. You know, I want full intimacy. I want to fully, you know, devote myself to you. Yeah, not everybody has that calling or even has that, you know, capacity. But it is crazy. And I think it should give us a high view of singleness instead of a lower view of singleness. I think that's a huge part of lie number two.
Yeah, I think Paul even says, I think it's in 1 Corinthians 7 where he's talking about this kind of issue, marriage versus singleness. He says that the married person's attention is divided. And I think that's super important. The single person can really, if they feel that tug towards intimacy, if they also value that freedom of not having their attention divided, it's really important. I think Paul kind of just lays it all out there and says, if this is like important to you, then you should try to give God your undivided attention, like Paul did, like Jesus did, like so many other celibate people throughout the life of the church.
Yeah. And I think if you devote yourself to singleness, that's only going to set you up. Like, it's going to set you up well if like singleness is where you're at long-term, and it's going to set you up to like know to devote like your dating relationship to that, to, you know, devote your engaged season, to devote your marriage. And so like, I don't know, the best thing that you could, if you're someone who wants to get married, the best thing you can do is devote yourself to singleness, and devote your singleness to the Lord, because it's going to train you to devote, you know, any, like when you get into a relationship, to devote that to the Lord as well.
Yeah, my parents have a quote that might be fun here to include. So marriage is when one man and one woman live in the resolution that life is better together than apart. So I think that there is this idea where two do become one in a union, but at the same time, your day-to-day interactions, you're just two people who just, in one sense, your attitude is life is just better together than apart. Yeah. But also, like, in that sense, your stuff is going to be amplified in that relationship. They're going to see everything,
which can be refining.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The whole idea is that marriage, yeah, is supposed to be primarily a sanctification, a union that brings about growth in God.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, would you rather have God looking at that consistently, directly, or sharing that between two,
right,
two unions? I don't know. So we can think about it forever, but, yeah, I don't know.
But God is good and gracious in that he can use both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I just think it like, you know, thinking clearly about what Paul said, just what are your values? Singleness might be better depending on who you are.
It's a good question to contemplate. Yeah. Well, cool. Moving, back to the beginning, the first lie, which we wanted to hit on last, we'll explain why, is, your life will be complete when you find someone. Which is debunked by the truth that you never arrive in this lifetime. And so we wanted to hit on this one last because, we felt like in our experience, we kind of really resonated with it, and that, you know, Reese is dating someone, I myself am married. And so we've kind of lived on the other side and seen, you know, life isn't complete when you find someone. So yeah, Reese, speak on that a little bit from your perspective, and then I'll add on to whatever you have to share.
Yeah, I think the idea of completion, what we talk about is like, that abundance or fullness that you want to feel, that we all kind of ache for. I think when you look across, when you span the New Testament, the idea of fullness or abundance has no relationship to your relational or marital status. I think the first example that pops into my head is 1 John chapter 1, I think it's verses 1 through 4, 1 through 5. He says, at the end of the message, or at the end of that little passage, that we write all of these things so you can share our joy. And that's related to, in the Gospel of John, when Jesus talks about fullness of joy. And the idea there is that it's not that, oh man, you're going to be married and you're going to have fullness of joy, or you're going to be single and you're going to have fullness of joy. Either way, fullness of joy comes from fellowship and union with God, union with Christ.
Yeah, and I even think that if you believe the lie that you're complete when you find someone, I think that inherently means that you believe the lie that you're incomplete until you find someone. I would say you're incomplete until you find Jesus and have a relationship with him. But I think that if you place a piece of your identity, if you don't view yourself as a whole person, until you find somebody else, that's really going to set you up for failure when you do find somebody else, because then you're going to, a huge part of your identity is going to be defined by that other person. And that is a weight that person was never meant to bear. That means that, you know, even in the highs and the lows, like that person is going to let you down. And so to understand that you are complete, that you are, fully known, that a full, you know, relationship with the Father is enough, that you can be grounded in his love and compassion for you when the love and compassion of your dating partner or your spouse, fails to live up to that, that idealized, you know, thing that you have in your mind, which it will, because they are a human. I don't know. I think it's just a really important perspective to have, is that person's not going to complete you. Relationship with Jesus is going to be the ultimate thing that fulfills you, and will allow you to then love another person, as you've first been loved by the Father.
Yeah. I think the two things my brain goes there with scripture. One is that if you believe that lie, then you believe that Jesus was an incomplete person, that he was missing something. And that he actually, like, his life is not sufficient for us. So I think that's one error that this lie immediately leads to. I think just also the best way to combat this lie, is to look at when Jesus talked to the Sadducees about marriage. He says, you all misunderstand the scriptures. No one is going to be married in the new heavens and the new earth. When the resurrection comes about, no one's going to be married. So this might be a new, a category breaker for people. When you get married to someone, you have not found your forever person. You have found your lifelong person. You will not be married. You'll probably know them as your marriage partner forever. But that covenant will be no more when you're resurrected, because we will be in complete, tangible relationship with Jesus, and we won't really need anything else. That's going to be the one covenant we need.
Yeah. And I loved how Kate hit on even the flaws. And I think you're getting at this here of like idolizing marriage, where marriage is the end all be all, rather than the means to the end of forming you to look more like Christ. Because if marriage is the end all be all, you're going to end up viewing probably your wedding day as a finish line, than, you know, the beginning of a lifelong journey of being formed. And when you go through difficult seasons within your marriage, or, you know, that person lets you down, or, whatever it may be, that's going to leave you searching for a lot of answers. So marriage is a means for our formation, and is a gift to that end. But is not, the end all be all in itself. But I think it's really easy to, you know, I don't want to like shame people who have gotten there, because I think it's a very easy thing to believe because of everything that our culture is pushing on us. And I think even that can be a flaw of Christian culture, where we idolize marriage and really push people towards that. And, you know, because it is such a value and such a gift, but I think it's also a flaw of the church, and that we're like, this is the thing for everyone. You're less than if you don't have this. And, can even pressure people who maybe shouldn't get married into, you know, getting married too soon. So,
yeah, I think there's an interesting point to be had there, that like, maybe your idea of life will be complete is that you'll have less pain. I think the way I thought about when she was talking about it, there's this difference between the ache of singleness and the pain in a relationship. Where I think ache is like something seems to be missing here. Like I know when I haven't eaten in a long time, my stomach aches, versus like, if I eat way too much, my stomach is in pain. It's so full. So I think there is a sense where, when you're in a relationship with another person, you like expectations are everywhere. And I think like you can get those unfulfilled and there's that pain there. So I think also that there's just this unrealistic idea that, that one or the other is going to have less trial and trouble. You're going to have trial and trouble, whatever you choose.
And that's where I think it's so important for us to have those relationships across, you know, dating, married, single, engaged, to where we can speak. That's where we have to be vulnerable, because I think we love to like project like, you know, the goodness and the best parts of like, you know, our relationships on social media, or, you know, our singleness. We're just out doing our own thing. And like, the more that we can speak out like the vulnerabilities and like say, hey, like, you know, this is good, but also it's not perfect. I think really allows, you know, the people who are in the opposite season, to understand even like the graces of their season. Cause if I'm able to be vulnerable about, you know, hey, marriage is really good, but like there are difficult things, then that's going to help a single person or someone who's just dating understand that they have a gift in their singleness. And I think vice versa of, you know, man, I'm really struggling. Like I'm really longing for someone. That helps me understand the grace that it is that, you know, the Lord has given me someone to walk alongside. And so I think that it really is a challenge to vulnerability, even so that communally we have a better understanding of the grace of the season we're in.
Yeah, definitely. I just keep going. I'm going back in my head. There's so much of this that's like, you know, you want to have a realistic picture of both. You want to make sure you're not lied to, but you know, God's going to be compassionate no matter what. Mm. So that's how you can take the discerning process between the two lightly. I could say so much more. I probably didn't even need to say that, but, you know,
well, here's the thing. We are running a little bit long here on the ASAP. Our frequent listeners will notice that. But honestly, what did you expect when you found out that it was recent on the podcast?
Yeah. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
I think, I would really regret this if I didn't say this. I think probably, you can have all of these lies being fought in your life. You can have, you can have realistic expectations. You can have a realistic view of this. But I think the one thing that keeps popping in my head is the fact that people are just so painfully lonely. And I think for the longest time, I was so painfully lonely. And that would show up in how emotionally desperate I was, how desperate for attention I was. Mm. So I would like to offer, I really think in my life, things are not perfect. I am not a perfect boyfriend to my girlfriend. I am not a perfect son to my parents. But I think in a lot of ways, I've really been able to combat this feeling of loneliness in my life. So I just want to leave you all with this last little gift. I heard this from Mother Teresa. So she would ask people, what moment during the day do they feel the most abandoned or lonely? And then she would say, you have to fill God. You have to fill that moment with God on purpose. So I think the thing for me, I would have this ache, you know, really honestly here, first thing in the morning, I would be like, why do I have to wake up to start this day alone? But the thing the main recommendation, through the guy who was teaching on what Mother Teresa taught, he said the best thing to do in those moments, is to set up a chair the night before you sleep, put it across your room to where it faces your bed. To where when you wake up, you can see it first thing. So she recommends first thing when you wake up, roll over, look at that chair and say, good morning, Jesus, every morning, as much as you can remember to do it. I did that for a while and, you know, there were months in between when I started doing that and when I started dating my now girlfriend, and it like just dissipated. I felt like it's not that I never had any more negative emotion. I definitely did, but I don't think I've felt loneliness since I started doing that. I think just filling those moments with Jesus. So yeah, take that as you will.
I love it. Cool. Well, I hope there's been some good, even practical steps to take out of this. Obviously building those relationships across, these single dating, engaged, married lines, being vulnerable in your season. I think even just that posture of Lord, how are you trying to use this season, is really, really good. So thanks for hanging with us. Kate, if you're listening to this, we would love to have you back, and so love what you had to share. But yeah, Reese, thanks for hopping on, and, we will catch you guys next week.
Bye now.